CCH board member to come to their tumultuous coronation of Karen Gillette meeting last Thursday. Or I should say Thursday.
Okay.
Here's a couple questions. True.
I'll hang up and you guys can play with
it. I know
that
CCH members decided not to come, but whether they were not invited, I don't know that.
Oh,
I think in fact, I think they may have been invited.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to hang up, call unless you want
this
to.
This board is an amateur board. This is HCRC I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They were put together originally by Ellen Grise under pressure from Linda Edwards and people, including myself, who were her advocates, because they couldn't cook a meal, let alone run a program.
Can you give us some more specifics about the origins of HCRC?
I don't know how much those origins are germane to today, because they did take our advice and they began building an advisory board, which was to become its board of directors. Mm-hmm. People like Don Lane have been on it, quit and discussed, and gotten back on it. People like Brian Koepke have put his whole life behind him in order to give the bureaucracy a real chance, and still walked out in disgust. These are the little pieces I know. I've never been invited, in spite of requesting copies of the agenda, to their board meetings, so I have no basis to know whether they're a real thing or not. But I do know that when a board of directors is supposed to be a nonprofit corporation, and their lead staff, generally their executive director, don't have a certain kind of healthy friction or tension between them, it doesn't work. It's a waste of taxpayers and everybody else's money and energy. And I don't understand why Community House is being put on the line like this. I mean, I could see how the city might have got a little off track initially, but I don't get it.
Well, I don't think Community House is being put on the line. I mean, I think this is all some kind of a sham deal whereby what they're doing is they're trying to bully CCH into making choices that meet Karen Gillette's desires, because Dick Wilson wants Karen Gillette to run Community House.
Well, yes, Karen Gillette has a lot of support in the system. I myself think she's become, through trial by fire, a competent administrator. But who's going to run the day center if this fantasy that you guys are calling a potential merger happens? You know, what's going to happen? We're going to lose money in both programs. I just don't get it.
All right, any comments on that, Becky?
Yeah, I haven't seen how this merger is going to bring any more money into homeless programs or be able to expand any homeless programs because of funding. I've never really been clear about why we needed to merge. But I do know that the origin, the first source of that, well, Alan Bayer said something interesting at the meeting. He said that...
Who's Alan Bayer?
Dr. Alan Bayer, he's the acting chair of Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And he said something interesting, that he had been wanting to put a merger together, CCH and somebody, he didn't know who, for the last three years. That's, I'd never heard any talk about a merger before last summer, August or September, I think it was the first that I ever heard anything about a merger going on. And that originated from Dick Wilson, who called a meeting and had some of the big wigs from CCH, like it was Mike Wilker was one of them.
Who was previously the chair?
The previous chair, Reverend Mike Wilker, who abandoned us after at one of our lowest hours. Thanks there, Mike. But we pulled the fat out of the fire, and CCH is a much more solid organization than it was a year ago. Carol Shannon said that at the Social Services Subcommittee meeting.
Carol Shannon is here.
Executive Director of Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And Carol said that, you know, a year ago we had $300,000 worth of debt, much of it left over from the Coral Street Open Air Shelter and the campground. And that today, at this point, we have $1,200 of debt. That's like the $100 a month that we're going to have to make up in donations, and that is no problem at all, unless the city throws some more financial roadblocks in the way of CCH. We should be able to open this June 7th. Community House, that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's been my understanding that Dick Wilson has always had a hard-on to get rid of CCH and Community House, so based on, I think he went after Frank Pusilik and a constantly delayed Community House month after month when Pusilik was trying to get it on track. Pusilik, by the way, is the former director of Community House, is now suing CCH for its abusive treatment. It essentially ruined his career here in Santa Cruz because Paul Lee and Daryl Darling and I guess Mike Wilker, all those old CCH members said nothing when he was smeared in the papers by lunatic allegations by an accountant, and allegations that were discredited, but you still see Karen Clark kind of recycling the same old trash in her stories about this. She's a Sentinel writer. Anyway, caller, is there any more comments or questions you have on this subject?
I look forward to the opening. I hope it will be June 7th and not another delay. Mm-hmm. And I would just wish that everybody, including homeless people that might be listening, would focus on things like that, something actually accomplished, not easy, you know, and not focus on the personalities, because I think it's some sort of a diversion.
Thank you, caller, and that's a salutary wisdom for us all. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. Personalities Are Us Radio, 423-5361. But I think the caller's point is very well taken. This community house project does mean 30 to 40 more beds for 30 to 40 more people. And in spite of all my criticism, that is true. There's no question about it. And so let's get those beds online as soon as we can and get rolling along with that. I think that everybody agrees with, whether it's Karen Gillette, the board of the CCH board, the city council, Becky Johnson here in the studio, and the caller. But I don't think it's a big, frankly, it's, to me, it's, the bigger picture is equally important. And of course, that bigger picture, I'm hoping we can learn something about. I'm going to try to put through a call to Committee for the Sleeping Ban Repeal Coordinator, David Silva. Possibly.
You'll
get that name right one of these days.
And David Silva.
Yes.
So today is the deadline for turning in signatures. And
after 5 o'clock, so you might say it was the deadline.
Was the deadline. Very well put. Is your initiative on the ballot?
No, our initiative is not going to be on the ballot. We didn't turn our initiative petitions in.
What do you mean you didn't turn your initiative petitions in? Tell us more.
Well, we have had quite a successful campaign in many ways in terms of making a shift in the consciousness of the city and then all the endorsements we got. But in terms of having a campaign that can have its petitions called back in when they're sent back out, we seem to fell short. And the last push days, actually, our error rate went up too high. Up until May 1st, we were really only doing about 11% error rate, calculated only about 11% error rate, which is pretty good. But after May 2nd, which is the cutoff date in terms of what the county uses for the registration list the county uses, which was provided to us by the Green Party to do our own verification. From May 2nd on, the petitions that came in during our push that came in late and with a lot of arm twisting, thanks Marco Marocchi for all your arm twisting, thanks Laura Tucker, thanks to all the people that did all the phoning to try to get these people to turn the petitions in. We didn't get, and we even asked for blank petitions we turned back in. We didn't get the petitions back in as we should have, and when we did get them, they were collected in such a manner that they were not signed, affidavits were not signed.
You know, it has to be said that this really is is an elaborate and very specific kind of process.
Yeah, it's a legal process, and you have to do it right.
Right.
It's nice if you have a paid organizer up front that can coordinate the volunteers. Just to have all the free lawyers that we had and all the 3 months of writing it and the input from the homeless and writing it and give back and forth,
Me tell, let me tell our listeners who probably know the petition, but in case they don't, the petition to repeal the sleeping ban, of course, is a petition to make it legal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in Santa Cruz with residential and beachfront areas that can be put off limits by the city council should they so choose. It also decriminalizes, or I should say re-legalizes, sleeping in your vehicle in areas not put off limits in residential and beachfront areas. And it also eliminates the blanket ban in all areas. I mean, it's my understanding, and I did a lot of signature gathering myself, most of the people I talked to thought it was an eminently reasonable change. I mean,
I think you could safely say it was a lot more than most people. Especially going door to door, you'd find most people who did go door to door found about 85% of the citizens thought that this was a bad law. It does need to be changed. And they like the way we changed it because it's a very simple change. We decriminalized sleeping for homeless and migrants. That's what we did. And we allowed the city council to create zones where they couldn't sleep, but we didn't allow them to ticket people for just the mere act of sleeping.
You know, I talked today on the phone to an organizer in San Diego who's working with 200 homeless people who are sleeping illegally in front of City Hall and have for the last 2 months, Roger Scott. He comes from Florida, Fort Lauderdale and Miami, where for the last 5 or 6 years, the city has allowed two large tent cities to exist downtown, one in each town, because of a federal court ruling that you cannot criminalize sleeping if there are no legal places for people to sleep.
Well, and the city of Santa Cruz has the capability of within Section 2 of the camping ordinance, to do that now. Our initiative wasn't addressing any of the social service problems at all, only the human rights aspect. And,
what
of
I'm
course,
saying,
I've always held that the human rights violation is what allows so much of the manifestations of cruel behavior, and it's unfair to decent good cops, too, to have to enforce this law.
Right, and of course, I'm sure this issue is, it's an ongoing concern. That
the campaign has just begun.
When you say that, do you have any specific plans for the future, David? How many signatures did you get out of, and how many did you need?
Well, we had, we came close to 3,000 or so, but there's still a lot of signatures out there. I've had so many promises from people that are supposed to have turned them in by day that didn't. Had one fellow who thought that since it wasn't on the June ballot that we had failed and threw his away. We had several hundreds stolen from us at Earth Day.
This would have eventually gone on the November ballot, right?
Yeah, it would have gone on the November ballot. Several hundred stolen from us on Earth Day, very, very late at the end of Earth Day, including my clipboard with several petitions, and also a couple of the major log sheets of the big petition gatherers.
So, how many petitions?
We also had some professionals.
How many petitions did you need, David, to get this on the ballot?
Well, 3,800 good signatures.
And you had about 3,000?
Yeah, but I'm saying the first half of those, there's only about 11% error rate, but the second half of those, the error rate was way, way too high. I informed people of that. I hope they still continue to turn their petitions in. We would like to know how many signatures they got. A lot of people got disheartened by a lot of things in the past couple of weeks. Our push, I would say, with City and Hill Press did not help with the way they handled the slow gherkin.
You had some pretty difficult weather to contend with. You've had El
Niño
weather.
That's another reason why the campaign is not over. The petition initiative drive itself may not be over because we have applied for an El Niño extension, and we expect that to be respected. I mean, El Niño reasons are given for all kinds of multi-million dollar funding to all kinds of roads and homes for rich folks, and since those poor people who were weathering the storm of democracy and those people who are least able to find sleep at night do deserve some El Niño consideration too, so we're hoping that we'll get that El Niño extension.
I notice that there are some causes that have kind of been going on at the same time that those of us interested in low-income folks have been following. There have also been major distractions like the Happy John Dine shooting and the Button Street shootings that certainly drew off attention of some activists. And there's also this, but I've noticed with the Pelton Street initiative, which had, I guess, they had 5,500 signatures, but a very high error rate.
5,600 signatures with an error rate of either 43.6 or 46.3.
Something like that.
We didn't want to do that. Right, if you have a high error rate and you turn your petition in, then according to the California election code, which governs the municipalities which we go by in this city, we would not be able to start a new petition on the same issue for a whole year.
So you still have the option to start a new petition.
So we have an option to start a new petition right away, and we know who our good petition gatherers were. What we need to do is we need to do some fundraising, have a professional person that is both a volunteer coordinator and can do some fundraising.
That's really what I was saying about Pelton Street and about the other causes like the beach flats.
We can join together.
I've noticed, yeah, that fundraisers recently for different groups, the Sleeping Band Initiative, Pelton Street, the beach flats. I guess Pelton Street didn't have a fundraiser, but beach flats did at Palookaville. Very sparsely attended. A lot of it is because folks are really kind of drawing together under emergency, desperate circumstances to do some fundraising at the last minute. But
yep.
I understand now perhaps people are going to perhaps sit down together, kind of start working on these things jointly.
Progressive promo co-ops are starting. There's talk about that.
Take a more effective approach to the whole thing, perhaps.
Yep. Sorry, excuse me for stepping on you. Yeah.
Sure, no.
There's a lot of talk of progressive promo co-ops. There's talk about, you know, using SCAN to do some calendaring, some active calendaring to make sure that we don't have our benefits at the same time.
There's
also the elections that are coming up. So, we have not failed in bringing really this up to all the forums.
You've actually gotten all kinds of endorsements from people that I never thought would endorse this, like Bill Monig, Geronimo Pratt, Jerry Brown, or the Green Party, and every major political force in town, SCAN, Wilf, CAB, I mean...
Those who've chosen to stand aside, also not block, have been very interesting. I mean, and even the Downtown Association refused to take official position on it, saying that they were neutral when asked by KTVU. That's some bit of a progress. And some liberals who have been hooked into this historically have stood aside and are now working in negotiations to try to maybe come up with some kind of a compromise. We felt we compromised enough, but there is talk of perhaps relinquishing the downtown as a sleeping area to try to appease and bring in some businessmen into this coalition and also to bring some police into this coalition.
That's a possibility.
Scares you, doesn't it?
No, not really.
But that's how politics is done, Robert. And we're working every angle
around,
we can.
You're sniffing around looking for some compromise there, eh?
Yeah, we're quite willing to do some compromises. A moratorium during the election on sleeping tickets and blanket tickets would be nice. We could probably talk more easily under such a moratorium.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we proposed in 1988, and we thought we'd gotten Mo Reisch, the council candidate that won, along with Don Lane and Jane Yokoyama, in a sweep that year to agree to, but of course they changed their minds once they got elected, or let's put it this way, they didn't believe in a moratorium. And
well, I think a lot of people now really want to get this behind us, and I think there's a lot of liberals that will be working to try to get this behind us.
Is there some rumor about somebody doing a fast around this, or is that still a rumor?
Well, I'm still considering a fasting process. Of course, I have HIV circumstances to consider because I am on special medications, and that those medications require compliance. And if I don't comply, that is kind of a betrayal to a lot of other people. So I have to take a lot of things into consideration. So I'm going to be speaking to my doctor to see how best I can stay in compliance and begin a fast. My spiritual advisor, Father Marini, has yelled at me, no damn way. Am I going to go on a fast?
And what would this fast be, David? If you did go into what would be the point of it?
The point of it is to point out to people and to get them to think more clearly how serious of a matter this is. I would ask if everybody on the 29th of June, when this fast would begin, if and when to begin the 29th of June, if they could not fast, and I don't want any hunger strikes or anything like that, but if they could go without sleeping that night and go to work or do your job or do whatever it is you have to do, and then sort of begin to realize what a homeless person has to do, especially working homeless person has to do in order to keep their job, not sleep the night before because it's against the law, and try it two nights in a row because if you do it the second night, it is 6 months in jail, and really have a sense of what homeless people go through. So I would ask that if I were to go into a fast, I would ask that of people if they could try not sleeping the night of the 29th, possibly the 30th, if they really feel
You haven't decided to commit yourself to it yet, but
it's a process, Robert.
But you are thinking that possibly on June 29th.
Well, it's a process that seems more and more evident. This is the only way that people can start getting serious the people that are in power. I think the common citizen of this city is ready to vote this law out. It's quite clear to me, and I think that if since we just paid hired a $12,000 or I believe it's $12,000 this past Tuesday opinion pollster for the city, they could quickly with a sampling discover that the city's of Santa Cruz, I would say probably by 85% would want this law changed and this sleeping ban and blanket ban eliminated. It's inhumane.
Wow. Well, thank you, David Silva.
Sure. And keep the faith, everybody. You know, we got a long way to go yet, and we're really close. I'll leave you with a quote from Dan Hamburg, our Green gubernatorial candidate, who just got endorsed by the Metro, I see, and both in San Jose and Santa Cruz. Dan Hamburg said, when you're up to the edge of a cliff, sometimes stepping back is progress. Thank you.
Thank you. So hopefully that's not stepping back as you look look away from the cliff. But yeah, right on. Thank you, David Silva. So the phone lines are still open, 423-5361. Give us a call. Here's another caller. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Good. That sounds like Tenants' Rights Union Santa Cruz, Marco Amarocchi.
Right,
hey,
here.
Senor Amarocchi. So what's happening? We actually talked to you rather briefly. Well, we kind of crammed a lot in at the last report you gave us last show.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening?
Well, you know, I just want to make a comment that we were talking about violence and violence against women,
mm-hmm.
and I think that should be a subject of one.
Wait a minute. Who was talking about violence?
One large segment. We were recounting some landlord violence against women, and sexual harassment.
And this was last show, yeah.
That was on the last show. Uh-huh. And we kind of had to cut it short because we only had like a few minutes to go through a whole lot of things. So I think that would be a good topic for a show.
Well, I would be up for that. But since we only have about 10 minutes left in this show, how would you summarize what's been happening?
Well, you know, I'm always advocating the mass movement of renters and all, and coalition building, and I see something like that happening today from our meeting with the petitions. You know, at David's, we need people out there who want
the petitions
to do promotion.
You mean you're on the committee to repeal the sleeping ban, and you were, I guess, talking about that as well. You're part of that group. Huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hardly hear you.
Yeah, I'm having a little problem playing with the mic. Can you hear me better now?
Let me.
Can you? You have to be near your radio to hear me because I'm not talking into the telephone.
Okay.
Keep your radio tuned up, unlike other stations which ask you to tune down.
Okay.
So, we talked about before. Tenants' Rights Union, of course, is struggling with kind of a variety of new problems. Small businesses are being evicted, like the Ocean Golden Ocean Cafe across from the courthouse, the Chinese restaurant. Strange landlord violence and bizarre restrictions on tenants. Claims that they're vandalizing fences when they're actually just requiring access to the river. You're having problems, I guess you were having problems getting an office because the sheriff decided he wanted to take over that little grubby building that you would hope.
261 Water Street, oh, that would have been a great office.
Anything sunny on the horizon?
I see us possibly getting a grant from Vanguard.
And again, you mentioned that's an association that does give money to some politically progressive groups.
Yeah, that's about the only one around that does that. There's just a few others, and we go into membership, and we're getting people joining. And
how many members do you have at Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, and how can people join?
They can join by calling us at 426-0644, or writing and sending us a check at PO Box 7484, Santa Cruz 95061. All these contributions would be going towards getting our office together, getting paid staff, coordinating our alliances and performing services to tenants all throughout the city and the county. There are 40,000 households out there, and we would like to get at least 1,000 hooked up with us.
How many do you have now?
We have 500.
Yeah.
But not all active in Zeus pain.
So you have, you have lots of freeloaders, huh?
Well, we have lots of people we've helped for free.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were in, they received an unlawful detainment. We've helped up to 576 people in the last year since last April with unlawful detainers. Really up to our elbows in them, and we could use people to come over and volunteer and work with this. So anybody out there, please get in touch with us. I know there's people out there willing to do things. And we are forming alliances with the students and TAs and grad students up at UCSC. They all pay rent, and we all agree that there needs to be something to be done about rent on a general basis.
Yeah, you know, there's actually protests, campouts, and sleepouts going on at Stanford. It's not just homeless people that are sleeping out.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's impressive. I know at Stanford there's the Stanford Homelessness Action Coalition, which... you know, they used to have a whole day of panels and discussions and speak-outs on homeless issues, and they're responsible, or perhaps a reflection of the liberal climate in Palo Alto, where there were many, many people spoke out against anti-homeless sitting ban law that came up a year ago. You know, and this process is being repeated in many cities, at least certainly in a number of them. Portland has a campaign to legalize spaces to sleep. Eugene has decriminalized sleeping in vehicles. Arcata had a rally for against its sleeping ban on May 1st. I think it was canceled because of the weather, but they were up there with Food Not Bombs doing their thing. San Jose is fighting back against attempts to gentrify and drive homeless people out of St. James Park. I'm kind of using you, talking over your time, because I'm running out of time, and our next talk show host has arrived and is
alrighty.
About to...
Thanks for having me on.
Now listen, let me remind our callers to give you a call at 426-0644.
Thank you.
To join the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz, to work with them, to volunteer with them, or to get help from them, from you guys, right?
Yeah, all of the above.
All of the above.
Very nice and friendly.
Hey, and you... Yeah, I would have to agree.
Uh-huh.
All right, and not too friendly, though. I like that.
Here I am.
Hey.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you,
bye.
Marco. Wow. Well, the clock is ticking down here, and there's all kinds of things happening in the papers. Atherton has a new law targeting loitering students. The city is considering a curfew ordinance that would subject students to a $100 fine for hanging around town during school hours, a problem officials say has become common around Menlo Atherton High School. But we're interested in knowing what you have to say, so you're on the line. Hi there, caller.
Hi. I have just one little tidbit to add to your list there, and I'm saying this on behalf of Housing Now in Santa Cruz. I hope the tenants union people are still listening. I understand that a significant part of the population of people who have been institutionalized because of developmental disabilities and probably a whole list of other limitations, these people are going to be dumped like mental health institutions were federally under Reagan. And the defunding has already happened. Right now, I understand our county's social workers are working ferociously and overtime probably, trying to find homes, stable private institutions or places, or even people's elderly parents, these are adults, to find placement for the people who have been dumped. This is a new homeless population you'll be seeing in the streets.
All right, and how can people contact you for more information, Linda?
Housing Now in Santa Cruz, which mostly involves itself in trying to convey public information at hearings and stuff, or mediating. The number is 423-HOME, but I really want to collaborate with tenants union workers on coming up with some constructive tactics here.
Well, give a call to Linda LeMaster at 423-HOME. Thank you. She is working with Housing Now in Santa Cruz. I am leaving now, and I want to thank you for being with me on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Going to be returning on Sunday. That's a good question. I'm frankly thinking of taking a 2 or 3 week vacation. You may find me on Sunday here at 11 o'clock, or possibly you may not. But you can certainly put any information you want on my Huff line, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you want to put something on the air, and hopefully we can get that on the air, we'll have more updates, news, and facts, stories, songs, and exciting comments on basic civil rights issues for the poor. I'm going to leave you now. I want you to stay tuned for Uncle Dennis's Earth First. He's actually going to take away my final theme song goodbye time. He's going to get it, but I think he deserves it. So let's give it to him. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for 2.5 hours of recorded Bathroom Spears broadsides. No call-in today, folks, but special speech guest appearances from Dan Hamburg, interviews with San Jose Food Not Bombs, Carol Denny of Berkeley, poverty activist, and Keith McHenry of San Francisco. Stay tuned.
Indeed, it is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. The tape you're about to hear is experiencing some technical difficulties. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz. And as I said before, the recorded version of me, you're about to hear a recorded version of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I can't be with the show today. And indeed, I'm concerned that the show's listenership is so small as not to really justify the work put into it in terms of the specifics that we're getting out on the air in terms of the interviews and such. I'm trying to get some information from the listenership here as to how many of you are actually listening to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. So if you're listening to the show today, I'd really be grateful today if you'd give a call to 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or 423-4833, and just drop us a message. It can be an obscene message if you wish. It can be a pleasant message, but let me know that you have been listening to the show, and let me know whether you think the show needs to be expanded, contracted, eliminated, or whatever. In other words, if you want the show to continue, I need some feedback from you, the audience, as to whether you listen to it frequently, how many people you know listen to it, and so forth, because I think that often what's needed is to get this information out in a better way. I mean, I'd like to see if often there's a printed possibility of getting out the old street shit sheet, which is the homeless publication I publish or used to publish. And there's a new weekly publication called the Lighthouse Press, which I'm hoping to be writing for. So that's a possibility as well. Meanwhile, we are struggling to get this tape on board. Who knows how, but we're going to get it done. You know, with me in the studio at the moment, I have Citizens Committee for the Homeless board member Becky Johnson, who actually has been involved in or quite closely connected with, she's been on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and for my money, though I'm no doubt partial, one of the most pro-homeless board members, one of those willing to speak out on issues that other board members who are primarily beholden to or worried about the political powers that be are not. Unlike those members, she takes a different stance, and she's been urging expansion of shelter space. She argued for the Safe Haven Project. She's been critical of different aspects of the current homeless scene. She's been a fighter for the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban Initiative here in Santa Cruz, an initiative which, as you probably know, went down insufficient signatures a few days ago. But in terms of the total impact of the campaign, really an impressive impact. More support for fundamental change around Santa Cruz's go-to-sleep, go-to-jail law than any other time I've known here in Santa Cruz, not just from the number of signatures, but establishment organizations like SCAN, CAB, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Green Party, Peace and Freedom Party. Almost everybody but the sellout progressives at the top are supporting this initiative, or did support fundamental change in the sleeping ban. So that was really important. And Becky was, of course, at the center of that, and one of the main impetuses for that. Although, ironically, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, though it supported ending the camping ban back in 1989, has never really came out in favor of supporting this initiative to repeal the sleeping ban. Right, Becky?
Yeah, that was a deal that was done with Catherine Byers, brokered it. She went to city attorney John Barisoni and got a ruling from him. I hardly would think he would be someone who would be neutral on this issue. And he said that if CCH had endorsed our initiative, they could jeopardize their 503c nonprofit status, which was just bizarre, since we probably had 20 different nonprofit organizations that endorsed us with absolutely no concern at all about jeopardizing their 503 status. We got information that was just simply incorrect. As long as the endorsement covers something under what the mission statement of the organization is, then it would be perfectly acceptable for them to give an endorsement or not. So CCH avoided the issue entirely, basically, and took no stand based on false information generated from Catherine Byers, and shame on Catherine Byers for that. Catherine Byers should, of all people on City Council, she should be supporting the right for homeless people to be able to legally sleep at night, to legally cover up with blankets. And I'm completely disgusted with Catherine Byers on how she handled that particular issue of the endorsement.
And these, of course, are harsh words, Becky. I've never heard you be so critical of sitting council person and frequent homeless ally Catherine Byers. But, of course, I know that I've been very critical of Catherine Byers for her role, for instance, in the Safe Haven debacle, whereby Citizens Committee for the Homeless was actually considering reopening a campground area for people to have a legal place to sleep, which they don't now. Tonight, when people go to sleep, there are less than 30 spaces for 30 people to sleep at night for more than 750 homeless people at night. And it was proposed, and actually was being worked on by CCH, in a subcommittee that Catherine Byers got herself appointed to, only to, in essence, sabotage the project by saying that there was no political will in the city council to pass the proposal. I mean, we all knew there was no political will to start with. The whole point was to generate the political will by presenting a fait accompli, a proposal to the city council that they would have to consider, a reasonable, fundable, doable project whereby people could actually sleep legally at night during the period of time when Community House itself had not yet been built. This was, I guess, a year ago, right, Becky?
Well, there's no doubt that a campground for homeless people is a very, very badly needed project here in the city of Santa Cruz. We haven't had anything like that since the Coral Street Open Air Shelter closed in December of 95. And the people were really thrown to the wind at that point. And I still run into homeless people that tell me how much better things were for them when the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was open, and how much worse things are since it's been closed.
Now, recently, I guess last show, we were talking, you had just come from a very crucial board meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, a board meeting that was open to the press. I believe the Sentinel writer Karen Clark was there, and also there was members of the public there. Cynthia Matthews from the City Council, not a member of the board, was present. And there was really, it was quite a hot session, and I'd kind of thought that you were not allowed to talk about that because you're on the board and there was some sort of muzzling or agreement, I don't want to call it muzzling, I guess some negotiations were still in progress around this whole touchy issue of Karen Gillette's resignation, and then the rescission of her resignation, where she insisted on some kind of control over the membership of your board. And I didn't really give you a full opportunity to speak about the issue. You had a lot to say about that. I wonder if I can give you that opportunity now. What happened at that board meeting that was significant? What should we know about it, and what can the public do? let's start with the first question. What happened at the board meeting?
Yeah, I love those triple questions
threat, triple threat.
You know, two is bad enough, but three questions in a row is virtually impossible for anyone to answer. So got to work on that interview style there, Robert.
Yeah.
What happened at the meeting? The the upshot, the culmination of the meeting was that our board did vote to proceed with the merger and sent our merger subcommittee back.
What merger are we talking about? I'm sorry. What, can you clarify that for folks who may not know?
I thought your listeners had been listening to before. The merger of Citizens Committee for the Homeless and Homeless Community Resource Center.
Mm-hmm.
The two main homeless service provider organizations here in the city of Santa Cruz. And this merger came about, I think it was like last summer, when City Manager Dick Wilson called a meeting for some of the bigwigs at CCH and HCRC, and he got them together and he told them something like, wouldn't it be nice if your two organizations worked more closely together? And that was kind of where the beginning of this whole this merger business, and actually CCH has been under, I would say, constant pressure since that time to proceed with this merger, which is clearly illegal, by the way. The city council cannot pressure CCH to do this merger. They can't threaten or use any kind of force for the merger. And so there's kind of this charade going on that this merger was really the idea of CCH, and we're just willingly doing this because it's for the good of the homeless, which is a bunch of crap. I haven't seen anything, and I'm sounding a little bitter, but I'm not too happy with how things have been going. I have not seen anything in all of these endless meetings that have been going on for months and months, and reports. I have not seen anything that indicates that homeless services will be improved in any way or expanded in any way, that there will be even a single night shelter bed in additional from what we're already offering. It likens to me, there are people who say, well, you know, if you're a homeless person, what's the difference? You know, CCH provides some services, HCR, others, is it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other for the average homeless person on the street, which is true. It's kind of like if you have McDonald's and you have Burger King in the same town, you would say that's not really a big choice between McDonald's and Burger King, but I don't think there's a single person on earth that would argue that it would be better to have McDonald's and no Burger King, that would be any kind of improved delivery of service. That's just something that's been touted in the press, and free radio listeners should realize that it's all talk. There's really no substance to it, and that homeless services are indeed only going to be, there's going to be, where at least currently we have two choices. Very soon, there'll only be one choice in town.
Now, well, isn't it true, though, Becky, that homeless people have been signing a petition circulated, some say, by Citizens Committee, our HCRC Executive Director, Karen Gillette, that certain board members associated with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, not be actually either be fired or not be allowed on the new board. And also homeless people attended quite a number of them, perhaps for the first time, a Homeless Community Resource Center board meeting a week ago where they urged Karen to come back. I think 12 strong. Finally, Homeless Community Resource Center homeless board member, long gone from town, but finally back again, Bubba Brian Kepke, an early homeless activist that we worked with to help open homeless services, who quickly became a subordinate to Karen Gillette at the Homeless Community Resource Center, is back in town to support the Homeless Community Resource Center and Karen Gillette in her position, which is that, as I understand it, if one reads Karen Clark properly in the Sentinel, that the board's at her board have the power to veto people on the CCH board, and also at the CCH board have the power to veto a few people on the other board. But in fact, I think it is your board that is the focus here, and I think perhaps you and possibly board member Laura Tucker, the only formerly homeless member on the CCH board.
Yeah, I've been getting calls for 2 weeks from all kinds of people saying, "Oh, Becky, your name's not mentioned in the newspaper, but are they talking about you?" And of course, I don't have any. I can't prove that I am the target. You mentioned the petition earlier in one of those many things you said just previously. That we did see a copy of this petition. It didn't say on it who was circulating it, and so we don't know if Karen Gillette had anything to do with it or not. Although we suspect she did. She's done similar things in the past. She certainly is not not above it, and we can expect this sort of behavior to continue under Karen Gillette's continued leadership. But
what's wrong with the petition? I mean,
the petition was supposedly circulated by homeless clients themselves, and it was very poorly worded. It said that they didn't want they wanted to have homeless people being able to represent themselves and not HUF people, that HUF people didn't represent them, and that they didn't want members of HUF to be on the new board. But the strange thing about the petition is no one is suggesting that there are going to be homeless people on the board of directors of CCH or HCRC. So the petition, some of the issues on the petition just were not relevant.
Isn't it true that there's actually no members of homeless people and members of the public are not actually allowed into HCRC board meetings, or haven't been at least during most of its life?
HCRC meetings have been closed tighter than a drum. When I asked Karen Gillette to tell me when the HCRC board meetings were taking place, where they were, who were on the board of directors, she was very curt and would provide me no information whatsoever on that. This was at the same time that Dick Wilson was encouraging our board and her board to work more closely together.